And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, I wanted to give you an update about some club's reaction to the individual who threatened my wife in a Sam's Club in El Paso, Texas. And their response has been, we're investigating. After the Walmart massacre that took place here less than 2 years ago, wonder what kind of investigating they did there. Go count the bodies? It could easily have escalated. And when the individual at the front door was asked to call security, she refused. Absolutely refused. After being asked four times. And then when the assistant manager was made aware of the incident, we looked for the officer that was assigned there. He was still in the building drinking coffee. He didn't spill a drop. And I was they were going to follow up with me and didn't. I had to call, and he was too busy to talk to me. But when he finally called me back, he said, well, he'd talk to the man, and everything was okay. No, it wasn't. My wife was left terrified. She left there in tears. Refuses to leave the house. But it's okay, because he talked to the guy. He spends so much money there, we can't offend him. He can attack somebody if he wants to. That's quite all right. That's Sam's policy. Well, guess who's going to be standing at the next board meeting? Raising the issue of customer safety. Guess who's going to talk about it every single day on his show? Are you safe in Sam's Club and Walmart? I don't think so. Because their policy is, depending on what he spends, he can do as he wants to. Well, today is February 25th, 56th day of the year. 309 days remain till this year's over with. On this day in history, in 138, Roman Emperor Hadrian adopts Antoninus Pius as his son, effectively making him his successor. 628, Khosrow II, the last great Shah of the Sasanian Empire, that's Iran, is overthrown by his son, Kavada II. 1336, 4,000 defenders of Pilinai commit mass suicide rather than be taken captive by the Teutonic Knights. Now, Pilinai was a hill fort in the Grand Duchy of Lithuania. Nobody really knows for sure where exactly it was located. That's been the subject of academic debates. But it's well known in the history of Lithuania due to its defense against the Teutonic Order in 1336. Attacked by a large Teutonic force. The fortress, which was commanded by Duke Margiris, tried to organize a defense. Well, finally losing hope, they decided to burn their property, commit mass suicide, to deprive the order of prisoners and loot. So, such is the fate of the offenders. In 1836, Samuel Colt is granted a U.S. patent for his revolver. Well, we said in the Constitution, all men are created equal. But the Colt revolver made it true. 1843, Lord George Paulet occupies the Kingdom of Hawaii in the name of Great Britain. It's called the Paulet Affair. 1870, Hiram Rhodes of Arvales, Republican from Mississippi, sworn into the U.S. Senate, became the first African-American ever to sit in Congress. 1875, Gangzu, Emperor of the Qing Dynasty in China, begins his reign under the Empress Dowager Cixi's regency. 1912, Marie Adelaide, the eldest of the six daughters of Guillaume IV, becomes the first reigning Grand Duchess of Luxembourg. That's a nice little country. I spent some time there. 1916, the Battle of Verdun, a German unit captures Fort Douaumont, keystone of the French defense. They didn't fire a bullet to capture the fort. 1918, German forces capture Tallinn to virtually complete the occupation of Estonia. 1921, Georgian capital, Tbilisi, falls to the invading Russian forces after heavy fighting, and the Russians declare the Georgian Soviet Socialist Republic. 1932, Hitler, having been stateless for 7 years, obtains German citizenship when he's appointed a Brunswick state official by Dietrich Clogers, a fellow Nazi. As a result, Hitler's able to run for Reichspräsident in the 1932 election. 1933, launch of the USS Ranger at Newport News, Virginia. It's the first aircraft carrier built to be an aircraft carrier commissioned by the U.S. Navy. 1939, as part of the British air raid precautions, the first of 2.5 million Anderson shelters is constructed in a garden in Islington in North London. For those that are not familiar with the term, an Anderson shelter was designed in 1938 by William Patterson and Oscar Carl Carrison in response to the request from the Home Office. It's named after Sir John Anderson, the Lord Privy Seal, with special responsibility for preparing airway precautions. And he's the one that initiated the development. After evaluation by Dr. David Anderson, Bertram Lawrence Hurst, and Sir Henry Jupp of the Institutes of Civil Engineers, the design was released for production. Basically, it was a simple affair, but it seemed to be effective. 1941, the outlawed Communist Party of the Netherlands organizes a general strike in German-occupied Amsterdam to protest against Nazi persecution of Dutch Jews. 1947, former abolition of Prussia is proclaimed by the Allied Control Council. The Prussian government already having been abolished by the Bubenslag of 1932. 1948, in a coup d'etat led by Clement Gottwald, the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia takes control of the government in Prague. They end the Third Czechoslovakian Republic. 1951, the first Pan-American Games are officially opened in Buenos Aires by Argentine President Juan Perón. 1956, in his speech on the cult of personality and its consequences, Nikita Khrushchev, leader of the Soviet Union, denounces Stalin. 1980, the government of Suriname is overthrown by a military coup led by Desi Bouterse. 1986, People Power Revolution. President of the Philippines, Ferdinand Marcos, flees the nation after 20 years of rule. Corazon Aquino becomes Philippines' first woman president. I wonder what happened to the 100 pairs of Imelda Marcos' shoes. 1991, dismantlement of the Warsaw Pact at a meeting of its members in Budapest. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. And holidays and observances. Ethelbert of Kent, Blessed Ciriaco, Maria Sancha y Hervas, Garland of Agrigento, John Roberts, the writer and the missionary, Blessed Maria Adiodata Pisani, St. Walpurga. She's canonized on May 1st, 870, and Walpurgis Night is celebrated April 30th. Kitano Baakisai, or Plum Blossom Festival in Japan. Memorial Day for the victims of the communist dictatorships in Hungary. National Day in Kuwait. People Power Day in the Philippines. Revolution Day in Suriname. And Soviet Occupation Day in Georgia. Okay, let's see what else we got. In 1858, Dalmati flees Venice. 1497, Italian troops reconquer Taranto in France. 1502, Austrian Emperor Maximilian I reformats the government machine. 1570, Pope Pius V excommunicates Queen Elizabeth I of England for heresy and persecution of English Catholics during her reign. And it also tells her subjects they don't have to give allegiance to the crown. I don't think that went over that well. 1605, the Portuguese garrison on the Amban surrenders to Admiral Vanderhagen. 1623, Duke Maximilian I of Bavaria becomes monarch of Paltz. 1634, Irish captain Walter Devereux kills Duke Wallenstein. 1643, the Pavonia Massacre. Dutch U.S. colonists killed 120 Algonquin Native Americans in Communipal in New Jersey, what's now New Jersey. 1667, Abraham Grisenson's fleet reached Fort Willoughby on the Suriname River. 1746, the Duke of Cumberland's troops occupy Aberdeen. 1751, the first performing monkey exhibited in America took place in New York City. Mission was 1 cent. After he raised enough money, he went to serve in Congress. Still there, from what I understand. 1791, the first bank of the U.S. is chartered. 1793, the first U.S. cabinet meeting was held at George Washington's home. 1795, French politician and educator Joseph Lacanau defines on behalf of the French Revolution an educational utopia aimed at putting an end to inequalities of development that affected people's capacity for judgment. 1799, the first federal forestry legislation authorizes purchase of timberland. 1799, Congress passes the first federal quarantine legislation. 1803, and the last significant act of the Holy Roman Empire, more than 100 German policies are abolished in a major internal reorganization. 1804, Thomas Jefferson nominated for president at a Democratic-Republican caucus. Now, since the Republican Party didn't exist in 1804, it was probably called something else, but that's just my view on it. 1836, P.T. Barnum exhibits African-American slave Joyce Heath, claiming she's the 161-year-old nursemaid to George Washington. And she said she was, too. And after all, why would they say it if it wasn't true? I've heard that so many times, I am sick of hearing it. 1838, a London pedestrian walks 20 miles backward and forward in 8 hours. 1837, the first U.S. electric printing press, patented by Thomas Davenport. 1839, Seminoles and their allies are shipped from Tampa Bay in Florida to the west. 1847, State University of Iowa is formed. 1855, the Bowery Boy gang leader, William Poole, also known as Bill the Butcher, shot in the back by a gang of arch rival John Morrissey in New York. He died March 8th. 1859, the first use of the insanity plea to prove innocence. In 1862, Congress formed the U.S. Bureau of Engraving and Printing to print newly issued U.S. paper currency, known as United States banknotes. 1862 was the first legal tender act passed by Congress, authorizing the U.S. Greenback into circulation. That was the first fiat paper money that was legal tender in America. And a fiat paper money is money simply because the government says it is. 1863, Congress creates the national banking system and the controller of the currency. 1875, Kiowa Indians under Chief Lone Wolf Quapago, as he was also known, surrendered Fort Sill in Oklahoma. 1879, Congress passes the first Timberland Protection Act. 1885, Congress condemns putting barbed wire around government grounds. 1896, the Italian government decides to attack Governor Barrettera of Eritrea. 1901, J.P. Morgan Sr. organizes the U.S. Steel Corporation. 1907, the U.S. proclaimed a protectorate over the Dominican Republic. 1910, the Dalai Lama flees Tibet for British India to escape Chinese troops. 1913, the 16th Amendment to the Constitution becomes law, providing a legal basis for the institution of a graduated income tax. 1919, Oregon is the first state to tax gasoline. The initial tax was 1 cent a gallon. It's much more than that today. 1921, the living Buddha, Hutuktu, is crowned King of Mongolia as the country declares independence from China. 1923, in the aftermath of World War I, bread in Berlin is 2,000 marks a loaf. 1926, Francisco Franco becomes Spain's youngest general. He is 33 years old. 1930, a Czech photographing device is patented. 1940, the first televised hockey game, the Rangers versus the Canadiens, took place on a station out of New York City. 1943, Viet Minh forms Indo-Chinese Democratic Front. 1945, U.S. aircraft carriers attack Tokyo. 1945, Turkey declares war on Germany. A little late. 1954, Abdul Nasser is appointed Egyptian premier. 1962, Robert F. Kennedy visits the Netherlands. He was Attorney General at the time. 1964, Muhammad Ali, the former Cassius Clay, wins his first World Heavyweight Boxing title when Sonny Liston fails to come out of his corner for round 7 at the convention center. 1966, Syrian military coup under General Hafez al-Assad. 1972, Paul McCartney made news when he released a single, Give Ireland Back to the Irish. Also in 72, attempted assassination of the Irish Minister of State for Home Affairs, John Taylor, who shot a number of times. The official Irish Republican Army later reclaimed responsibility. Well, on that note, I think we will stop our history session. We've been talking about the supernatural. And we finished up talking about folks who claim they see dead people, such as James Van Prague, best-selling author and television personality, calls himself a mediumship pioneer, a respected spiritual teacher who's brought a mindful awareness to on the subject of communication with the dead into the public psyche. In his live TV shows and television appearances, he claims to communicate with the spirits to deliver detailed messages of love, comfort, encouragement from loved ones on the other side. His critics say he relies on the same techniques others, such as sham mediums, do. And when put to the test, his readings aren't always reliable, as evidenced by the time he told Barbara Walters she had an elevated white blood count. She went and checked, and she didn't. When John Oliver pointed out in a segment he did about Van Prague and others in 2019, when psychic abilities are presented as authentic, it emboldens a vast underworld of unscrupulous vultures. And, of course, one of the most famous is Teresa Caputo. She's got a hit reality show called Long Island Medium. She's actually been called larger than life. She says she contacts the dead for her clients and describes the experience as almost a cooling chill from head to toe. Her detractors call her an entertainer and a huckster, uses common manipulative techniques to play on the grieving and the gullible. Magician and skeptic DJ Groth said it's difficult to watch the show and not feel heartbroken for those who are desperate to hear from the departed. Caputo shot back and said, "I will not reprove or defend my gift. What is, is." Well, there are different ways of foretelling the future, or divination, as it's called. One is the Ouija board. In response to a rise in spiritualism in America, the Ouija board began to be sold as a $1.50 novelty game starting in the 1890s and became extremely popular. Players put their fingers on a teardrop-shaped device called a planchette and watch in amazement as it seemingly moves of itself over the words yes and no and letters and numbers to spell out words. Researchers claim the phenomena is a result of the ideomotor effect, in which the subconscious causes the muscles to act and move the planchette. I've been a watcher, and I've been involved in using a Ouija board, and it does boggle the mind at times. Then we have palmistry, also called chiromancy, which tells people fortunes by reading the shapes of hands near lines. It's been practiced for millennia by many cultures, but probably it began in India. And although the entire hand is studied, modern palmists give the most importance to the heart line, the head line, and the lifeline, using them to interpret a person's health and romantic and economic futures. You know, years ago, I guess I was 16, 17. My parents owned a motel in Florida. And one of the outbuildings, a nice little cottage, was rented by a gypsy family. And their daughter, who was cute as a bug, could take your hand and tell you things that have come to be true over the years. Then there's the reading of tea leaves. like interpreting patterns in coffee grounds and wine sediments and the splatters of molten wax and lead, the art of tassiography, or reading tea leaves, began when tea came to England from China. And reading tea leaves, a reader looked at the dregs of loose-leaf tea for shapes and patterns that speak to a person's past, present, and future. And then, of course, there's the reading of the crystal ball. The ancient Egyptians, Persians, Chinese, Native Americans all stared into crystals for divine inspiration. But the first recorded use of spherical objects was by the Druids of Britain, Ireland, and Gaul, who would fall into a trance-like state as they gazed into a polished ball made of a mineral called beryl. The image of a woman in bangles and scarves telling fortunes over a crystal ball began with traveling carnivals in the U.S. and Europe. My favorite, of course, is the tarot card. While linked to ancient Egypt and India and the teachings of Kabbalah, the tarot deck originated in northern Italy in the late 14th and early 15th century. It was created for a game called Tarocchi. The fanciful images like the Fool and the Death were inspired by carnival costumes. As the game spread through Europe, it was renamed the Tarot. The cards were used for mystical purposes to the late 18th century, but it's certainly gained a lot of popularity since then. And there's other ways to predict the future. There's anthropomancy. That's when you look at the entrails of dead or dying humans, often virgin females who've been sacrificed for that purpose. Gastromancy. That's where you listen to stomach noises to tell the future. I know what it tells me when I hear it. Ophelomancy, determining how many children a woman will have based on the markings on her newborn's navel. Then there's the watching how the light plays off oil fingernails. That's called onychomancy. Gyromancy, finding inspiration by walking in circles until you collapse from being dizzy. And then tyromancy, observing cheese as it coagulates. Oh, that's a great way to tell the future. Well, astrology has made a comeback in the last few decades. And actually, it's more popular than ever. It's the dawning of a new age of Aquarius, complete with face mask. And even before the coronavirus pandemic, the zodiac was enjoying its biggest resurgence since the 60s when Linda Goodman's Sun Sign was a best-selling book. According to astrologist Chani Nichols, there's something that's happened in the last 5 years that's given astrology an edginess, a relevance for this time and place. And that something was millennials and the internet. No longer the stuff of newspaper columns back near the funny pages, astrology was tailor-made for the internet, right for the snappy memes, pithy tweets and online discussions, endless exploration down information rabbit holes. Astrologers were in high demand with readings online and in person while their books were selling like crazy. For young adults, it was hip to have your head in the heavens, and everybody had their own personal astrologer. And when coronavirus engulfed the world, astrologists, like every other business, sank into the doldrums because of stay-at-home orders and social distancing. People were traumatized, too terrified to ask what the future held because they really didn't want to know. That's according to astrologer Karen Thorne. She charges $325 an hour for readings. Now, she said, people are starting to come out of the woodwork because they feel safer. They all want to know about their life situation, work, relationships, and money. For the first time, people started looking to the heavens. They found meaning in the alignment of the stars and the planets. Now, this is not a science by any accepted definition, but astrology does conform to a set of rules and helps give order and meaning to a confusing world. And even non-believers can tell you what their zodiac sign is. But it's the darker hours when the stars seem to shine the brightest.
Daniel Defoe could have been writing an op-ed in today's paper when he observed the people were more addicted to prophecies and astrological conjurations, dreams, and old wives' tales than ever before. Instead of COVID-19, he was discussing the outbreak of the bubonic plague in 1655. But now COVID has certainly given a new, I guess you could say, edginess to it. You know, after the assassination attempt on her husband, First Lady Nancy Reagan turned to astrologist Joan Quigley for advice on President Reagan's schedule. She told Quigley, "I'm scared every time he leaves the house." Well, in spite of widespread mockery, the Reagans tried to downplay Quigley's influence, though the astrologer insisted she did play a big role in his administration. "I was responsible for timing all press conferences, most speeches, the State of the Union address, the takeoffs and landings of Air Force One." She wrote a 1990 memoir entitled, "What Does Jones Say?" The connection to the first family made Quigley a celebrity, though after the Reagans left the White House, her fame died down quite a bit. She died in 2014 at the age of 87. Well, from reading tea leaves and predicting the future, let's talk about spirits. Get a sneak peek at floating phantoms and visit the most haunted places in the world. Now, a lot of people believe they've seen ghosts. They've seen a scary apparition. According to one poll, 42% of Americans believe in ghosts. And the number is even higher in Europe and Asia, which is why haunted tours and paranormal television shows thrive. But what you may think of as a ghost may not be one at all. Now, ghosts are usually defined as disembodied beings tied forever to the location of their death, particularly if their passing was a violent one. So they return to settle unfinished business. Spirits, on the other hand, are said to be the personalities or souls that outlast the human body, and they can pop up anywhere, usually summoned by a powerful emotion. And so, for that reason, they're considered much more common than ghosts. Either way, a lot of people have seen or felt something ghostly. Close to 30% of Americans reported experiencing some sort of paranormal event. Let's talk about a few events that have gained a large reputation. How about the ghost ship? In the 17th century, a storm-battered ship called the Flying Dutchman was attempting to navigate into a harbor near South Africa's Cape of Good Hope. They couldn't find a pilot ship, and they drifted away into a churning sea. The crew was never seen again, at least not alive. And for centuries, the Flying Dutchman has been spotted as a ghost ship around the world. It's been seen in the Hudson River in New York, emerging from fog and shadows and then vanishing. Sailors, of course, consider its appearance a bad omen, signaling oncoming storms or fatal accidents. And writers have long been fascinated with her, with the doomed ship making cameos in everything from Pirates to the Caribbean movies to the cartoon show Scooby-Doo. Well, numerous spirits make regular appearances at the White House. John Adams' wife, Abigail, darts about in a cap and shawl, leaving a scent of lavender in her wake. Thomas Jefferson plays his violin. Andrew Jackson lets obscenities fly, and Dolly Madison tends to the rose garden she planted in the 1800s. But the most well-documented phantom seems to be that of Abraham Lincoln, spotted by none other than a naked Winston Churchill. During an overnight visit to the White House, the British Prime Minister walked out of the bath stark naked, only to confront the ghost of Abe Lincoln standing by the fireplace. He said, "Mr. President, you seem to have the advantage of me," and at which point Lincoln is said to have smiled and faded away. According to Jared Broach from the Nightly Spirits Tour Guide, they say Lincoln always comes back whenever he feels the country's in need or in peril, and certainly we're in both need and peril right now. Then there's the widespread story of the vanishing hitchhiker. Although famed as an urban legend, a driver picks up a hitchhiker and then disappears from the car. Now that story predates the internal combustion engine and is heard in cultures around the world. The New Testament talks of the Ethiopian in a chariot picking up the Apostle Philip, who vanishes after performing a baptism. Later travelers would dematerialize from horses and wagons, and the most common version told today, the hitchhikers used a girl or a young woman asking to be dropped off at a certain address. When they get there, she's gone, and the driver finds out she's been dead for quite some time. Then there's Margaret de la Pole. Like many ghosts haunting the Tower of London, Anne Boleyn wanders around without her head. And two young boys who were murdered shiver in her nightshirt. The most terrifying is that of Margaret de la Pole. Sister of two kings, de la Pole was sentenced to death when she refused to genuflect for a third king, Henry VIII. But her execution went a little bit off script. Chased around the scaffold and hacked apart piece by piece in front of a horrified crowd, she died a slow, gruesome death. And her screams have been heard echoing throughout the old castle ever since. Supposedly, when the headsman went to cut her head off, he was slightly off his mark, and instead of cutting her head off with one stroke of the axe, he only injured her, and she jumped up and ran. And then, of course, we have the famed Bell Witch. A cave in rural Tennessee is home to the legendary witch who tormented the Bell family in the early 1800s with spooky nocturnal noises that intensified the beatings and finally the poisoning of the family patriarch, John Bell. According to the story found on a historical marker near the Bell's former home, the Bell witch kept the household in turmoil, assaulted Bell, and drove off Betsy Bell's suitor. Child crying out for help when he got lost while playing in the 500-foot-long cave on the Bell Farm heard a voice saying, "I'll get him out." Hands then pulled the boy to safety, and a disembodied voice lectured the child on the dangers of cave exploration. Was that the Bell Witch? Nobody seems to know, but somebody rescued the kid. Then, of course, there's Bloody Mary. According to urban legend, if you chant Bloody Mary 13 times in front of a mirror, a ghostly corpse, covered in blood and sometimes holding a dead baby, will appear in the mirror. According to Snopes, Mary's a witch who was executed 100 years ago, or a woman whose face was mutilated when she died in a car accident. There's a similar story told in Japan about the ghost of a young girl who haunts school bathrooms. Certainly. I've been to a number of schools where I'm sure there was a ghost hanging around. You know, we all love a good ghost story. Kids giggle to a friendly ghost named Casper and spend hours in the arcade with the whimsical ghost in Pac-Man. Moviegoers cowered from the ghost in the Poltergeist films, swooned over Patrick Swayze hunky spirit and ghost, and laughed and shuddered at Slimer, the big green blob in Ghostbusters. Then, of course, Harry Potter author J.K. Rowling gave us spirits including Moaning Myrtle. Ghosts float through several of Shakespeare's plays, most famously in Hamlet. One of the best known is the hat trick pulled off by Charles Dickens with the Ghost of Christmas Past, Present, and Future. If you remember, they're the spirits who visited Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. Well, from ghosts, let's talk about the most haunted places in the world. If you're itching to get up close to the paranormal, why not visit some of the places I'm going to talk about? First and foremost on the list is the Stanley Hotel. This place was so scary it gave Stephen King the creeps. Best-selling horror novel list was suffering a bad case of writer's block when he and his wife checked into the Rocky Mountain Resort in Estes Park, Colorado. This was in the 70s when it was nearly empty for the off-season. The strange noises and frightening vibes inspired King to write the blockbuster The Shining, which was adapted into a popular 1980 movie with Jack Nicholson axing a door and snarling, "Here's Johnny." Then, of course, we have Eastern State Penitentiary. I mean, this place was so strict, prisoners were forced to wear hoods when they left their cells to prevent them from talking to other inmates. Inmates who broke the rules in this Philadelphia fortress constructed in 1829 were plunged into icy water baths, chained to the wall, and clamped into an iron gag. And those who didn't die from disease, suicide, and murder went mad in this solitary confinement-only prison. Which may explain an eerie, disembodied voice that many people reported that moans, "I'm lonely." Now, one of my favorite places, of course, was the Queen Mary. I spent several days there while my wife was at a meeting. The majestic 1,000-foot-long ocean liner that carried the rich and famous across the Atlantic in high style now sits permanently docked in Long Beach, California. It's a hotel and tourist attraction for visitors looking for a taste of the ship's glory days. And ghost hunters seek spectral visions. They can start in cabin B340, where bedsheets fly, the toilet flushes on its own, and a man's voice yells out from the shadows, "Get out!" Closed for years, but can now be rented for the night. Prices for that room start at $499. None of the staterooms are what I would call fancy, but they are nice. How about the Bangar Fort, 17th century fortress in India that bars all visitors after twilight before sunrise? There are signs that threaten legal action against violators. These warnings stem from a legendary curse cast on the fort hundreds of years ago by a lovesick wizard after his romantic overtures toward a prentice were rudely rebuffed. Even during the day, visitors report a strange feeling of anxiety and restlessness in the sense that there's somebody watching them. And then if you spent time in Paris, there are the mysterious catacombs. In the darkness beneath the City of Lights lurks a maze of tunnels and rooms filled with the skulls and bones of 6 million Parisians that are assembled in macabre sculptures and stuffed into every nook and cranny of the limestone. Starting in the 1700s, the French brought their dead to these catacombs to relieve overcrowded cemeteries. The last body was allegedly interred there in 1859. While only a tiny portion of the 186 miles of caves open to the public, adventurous cataphiles, as they're called, wander into the prohibited sections to have parties and search for ghosts. Well, let's talk about Alcatraz. Originally built as a fort to protect the harbor, and once the final stop for the baddest of the criminal element, this federal penitentiary in San Francisco Bay closed in 1963. But the ghosts of the inmates who didn't survive their time at the Rock were... There were 8 murders, 5 suicides, and 12 killed in escape attempts. But these... The ghost, as I say, can still be heard banging doors and crying out. One of the most famous prisoners, Al Capone, was so traumatized by his time there, he spent his days cowering in his cell or numbly strumming his banjo. He was part of the Alcatraz band. The sound of him playing the banjo can still be heard echoing through the cell blocks. And then there's Poviglia Island, place of pain and refuge, this tiny island in the gloom between Venice and Lido. In Italy became a quarantine colony during the 14th century plagues. The sickest victims were sit there to die or to be burned to death on giant pyres. Centuries later, an asylum was built there for mentally ill, some of whom were possibly subjected to strange experiments in the 1930s. Now abandoned, the curse is believed to have fallen over the island, with locals and tourists alike prohibited from visiting. And for something a little closer to home for those of us in the U.S., how about Lizzie Borden's house? You can spend the night in this Victorian home in Fall River, Massachusetts. This is where a young woman allegedly took 40 whacks or so to her father and stepmother on August 4th, 1892. Became one of the most sensational axe murders in history. Now, what's been described as a creepy bed and breakfast, the Lizzie Borden house is said to receive regular visits from Lizzie, who actually had been acquitted of murder, but it was ostracized by the neighbors, who were convinced she'd gotten away with it. Well, from haunted places and ghosts, let's talk about poltergeist. Things that go bump in the night. These angry balls of energy are said to feed off human emotions. The most terrifying of all, the ghosts, poltergeists, seethe with anger. Their name is German for noisy ghost or noisy spirit, and they live up to that label by slamming doors and setting fires and smashing walls and turning televisions and appliances on and off, often in an enclosed environment like a house or an office. They catch people off guard because their rage builds up slowly. The change is so subtle that only the household cat or dog picks up on them at first by fixing their stare at them or scratching the floor. In the first Poltergeist film in 1982, if you recall, a young girl welcomed them with the line, "They're here." Next comes the little sounds, a bump in the attic, a clanking pipe, a squeaking baseboard, maybe some strange smells. Now, this activity may die down on its own or escalate to the main event, which is a horrifying spectacle of flying furniture and spontaneous combustion that can end as quickly as it begins, only to simmer in the background and reappear without warning. Some people claim they've spent much of their lives with poltergeists, treating them like temperamental, unwelcome house guests. And some, in fact, are actually considered benign. The so-called friendly poltergeists, more mischievous than destructive, but they're all invisible, manifested only by things they move and odors they generate. According to PsychicElements.com, poltergeists aren't ghosts at all in the technical sense, but active kinetic energy that causes physical disturbances. They feed off the emotions of somebody in the room, usually a female teen. That's why the remedy is not exorcism performed by a priest. I mean, they're not evil spirits, but instead involves some soothing words and maybe mental health counseling. Paradoxically, fear powers the poltergeist. So the best thing to do when the poltergeist is soaring across the kitchen is just to remain calm and continue to drink your coffee. That is, of course, if they exist at all. Scientists say there's no such thing as poltergeist, and any supposed evidence can be attributed to natural phenomena like unusual air currents and earth-shaking groundwater flows, memory lapses, mental disorders, drug-induced hallucinations, and, of course, the ever-present hoaxes. Well, the only thing scarier than the three poltergeist movies is the supposed curse that befell the cast, attributed by some to the fact that star Jo Beth Williams was forced to fall into a pool of real skeletons instead of plastic ones. It seems the plastic skeletons were considered too expensive by the producers. And that was followed by one tragic death after another, starting with the murder of 22-year-old Dominique Dunn, who played the oldest daughter. That was just 5 months after the first movie debuted in June of 1982. Native American actor Will Sampson performed a secret late-night exorcism on the set of the sequel, only to die of cancer at 53, a year after the film came out. And the most shocking death was that of little Heather O'Rourke, who said the famous line, "They're here." She succumbed to a misdiagnosed intestinal problem at the age of 12, right prior to the release of Poltergeist 3. Are we talking curse, or are we talking... Well, as I said in James Bond, once is happenstance, twice is coincidence, three times is enemy action, and that's three deaths, so I'd be very suspicious. And then, of course, there are the ever-present cursed items. These are items you look but don't touch. While you'd expect to find ghosts and spirits in old houses and abandoned hospitals, sometimes evil said to lurk in everyday objects, whether they're an ordinary-looking doll or an exotic gem. Forget raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. These are a few of our, shall we say, scariest things. How about the crying boy prints? Mass-produced prints of this 1950s painting by the Italian artist Bragolin of a weeping toddler gained notoriety because of their supposedly eerie fireproof qualities. These prints escaped unscorched from otherwise devastating house fires in the 1980s. Though fears grew that the prints themselves caused the fires, a BBC program concluded the prints had been coated with a fire-retarding varnish. Maybe yes, maybe no. Then there's Robert the Doll, the inspiration for Chucky, the horror movie doll that had an evil mind of its own. A Florida child named Robert Eugene Otto got this doll with creepy black button eyes as a birthday gift more than 100 years ago. Shortly after that, the boy's parents believed they could hear the doll speak to the child, saw its eyes blink, and saw it walk on its own. and now sits in a glass case in the Florida Museum where it's said to change positions to cause cameras and cell phones of visitors to malfunction. Well, let's talk about a $250 million item that's said to be cursed. That's the Hope Diamond. It's a walnut-sized blue diamond weighing more than 45 carats and worth over $250 million. This jewel's reportedly brought suicide, murder, drug addiction, divorce, and financial ruin to generations of owners. Though it's said that the curse was concocted by 19th century newspapers. After passing through many rich hands, including its namesake, London banker Thomas Hope, who said to have suffered no ill effects from owning the diamond, and the diamond's now housed in the National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. Harry Winston, the jeweler, donated it to the museum. Maybe he wanted to get it off the premises. Well, how about Annabelle the doll? According to paranormal investigator Lorraine Warren, this rag doll is a real inspiration for the possessed plaything in the Conjuring movies. Given to a nurse in 1968, Annabelle was said to change position, cross its legs, lie on its side, and leave scrawled notes like, "Help me, help us." Warren and her late husband Ed acquired the doll and stashed the toy in a glass case in her basement at the Ward Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut. Well, how about the Hands Resist Him painting? It's a 1973 painting by Bill Stoneman of a 5-year-old boy standing next to a scary-looking doll in front of a window with hands pressed against the glass. This became an internet sensation when an eBay seller claimed in 2000 it held paranormal powers, with the children literally coming alive and fighting with each other on the canvas. Well, this work now hangs in a gallery. Hadn't been any more reports of misbehavior by the two kids on the in the picture, but it also inspired a 2016 book. And then we have the Conjured Chest. A slave named Hosea carved this 4-drawer mahogany chest in the 1800s from a notoriously abusive master named Jacob Cooley. Sorry about that. Cooley repaid Hosea for his work by beating him to death. Other slaves retaliated by sprinkling dried owl blood on the chest and bringing in a conjurer man to curse it. That resulted in the death of Cooley's son and at least 50 more people linked to the chest. Now sits in the Kentucky Historical Museum. Well, just as items can be possessed, people can be possessed as well. We're going to talk about a few stories of demonic possession. It defies all explanation. The devout are suddenly repulsed by all things holy. They kick and they thrash and they foam at the mouth. Furniture flies, beds shake. Some say the only explanation is that Satan has invaded the body. Very cinematic, which is why demonic possession is a favorite theme of horror movies. But you have to ask yourself, are they real? Well, we're going to talk about some case studies. How about Anna Eklund? For her first 14 years, Anna Eklund appeared to be a normal 19th century girl raised by her German Catholic immigrant father in Wisconsin after her mother died when Anna was very young. But in 1896, after her 14th birthday, she changed. She refused to enter the church, she refused to take communion, became sickened at the thought of holy water, and engaged in what were described as unspeakable sexual acts. Starting in 1912, Anna underwent several exorcisms spanning 14 years, during which she reportedly erupted into fits of rage, vomited tobacco leaf-like material, spoke in multiple languages, collapsed in the bed, and shrieked, "Hell, hell, hell." Well, as she got older, the fits subsided, suggesting they may have less to do with Satan and more with an misunderstood teenage rebellion and what was rumored to be abuse by her father. Well, in 2016, her story got a Hollywood treatment in a book called The Exorcism of Anna Eklund. I think they made a movie out of it, too. Well, then we have Roland Doe. The pastor and family of a 14-year-old American boy known by the pseudonym Roland Doe. I suspect that he was possessed by the devil because his family claimed furniture would fly and vases would levitate around him. He spoke in a guttural voice and couldn't stand religious objects. Now, when they made the movie out of this called The Exorcist, the character was switched to a girl. During a series of exorcisms in the late 40s, the word evil and hell and an X appeared on his body. His mattress shook and he became violent. Slashed the arm of one priest and broke the nose of another until it all stopped. Some of the supposed eyewitness accounts may also have been exaggerations or outright inventions. Others suggested the boy suffered mental illness, aggravated by his grief over the death of his beloved aunt, who was a Ouija board playing spiritualist. Then there's Annalise Michel. In her teens and early 20s, this German woman stopped entering churches because the ground under her feet burned like fire. She hallucinated, heard voices that told her she was damned and went right to hell and suffered seizures. Diagnosed with epilepsy and depression, she didn't respond to psychiatric medication. Her family became convinced she was possessed by the devil. 1975, when she was 24, she underwent a brutal year-long exorcism to purge her of the dark forces, but instead it left her malnourished and dehydrated. She died in 76, severely underweight with pneumonia and broken knees from constant genuflecting. Her parent and two priests were found guilty of negligent homicide, sentenced to 6 months jail terms and reduced to 3 years of probation. Her tale was the basis of the 2005 movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose. 2007 Gallup poll revealed that 70% of Americans believed in the devil. Not surprisingly, Catholic exorcisms are on the rise. And if you don't believe in the devil, that means you don't have a mother-in-law. Well, from talking about the ghost and exorcisms and possession, there's a lot of other supernatural possibilities that make the rounds. We've talked about a number of monsters, and many of those fall in the supernatural realm. You know, tomorrow night we're going to be talking about UFOs and aliens. You know, many of these stories fall into the supernatural category. Do UFOs exist? Well, certainly. If you don't know what it is, it's unidentified by definition. How about aliens? Well, I would tend to submit that I've seen a number of strange things in my lifetime that I would classify as alien. I almost got in a gunfight with what was clearly a UFO. And it ignored M16 and M60 machine gun fire. So that was, I believed, in the realm of the supernatural. Well, on that note, we come to the end of tonight's show. Once again, we've run out of time. So until tomorrow night, at the same time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.